This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, my ghosts and ghoulies. This is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. And as Donovan said back in 1966, this must be the season of the witch. Well, today we're going to be giving you a little sampling of someone who considers herself to be a witch. Kind of interesting. She has quite a background. But before we get to all that, we want to welcome Matt Habens and Chuck Arkin as the newest Friends of the Magic Word. Thank you, gentlemen, very much for your patronage. And in particular, I want to mention that Chuck Arkin has been a friend of the Magic Word for some time, having made the occasional donation from time to time, but has recently decided to make an ongoing and monthly pledge. And so I thank you very much. Those are the kinds of things that really help us the most from month to month, because we continue to have these kinds of expenses that we have to pay for in order to keep this podcast going. So thank you guys very much for becoming friends of the Magic Word and remaining friends of the Magic Word. And for anyone else who might be interested, please consider giving us a financial donation or a pledge if you can. If not, then we will certainly appreciate you giving us a 5-star rating on the podcast platform, however you listen. So thank you, all of you goats and ghoulies, for listening from month to month and helping to support the Magic Word in whatever way you can. Well, as I said, this week we are going to have an interview with a witch. And Kristen Lambert has been someone many of you know of from different parts of her life where she has been involved in magic. She is pretty young, I think, and still has done so much for the magic community. Many years ago, when she was preteen, that she was competing in magic contests at conventions, and then later had appeared on a couple of movies. She was in Desperate Acts of Magic and also in Make Believe. She's appeared also on Masters of Illusion, on the CW Network, and I believe has been on Penn & Teller Fool Us even. And she has other television credits to her name, as well as performing with Criss Angel and being on tour with the Supernaturalists. And she's going to talk about all that and more. Some of you may know her currently because she has an ongoing monthly column in Genie Magazine. But of late, she has had kind of an interesting direction of her performing life, and that is of doing seances and doing things on the rather bizarre and macabre side. She has recently been performing at the Stanley Hotel in Colorado and is currently at Mystique out in California. Well, she's going to be talking about, again, all of that and more. She is quite a lady and someone who is fascinating to talk to with her background from UCLA and talking about existentialism, and she has a deep interest in horror movies. We just have a great conversation. I think you're going to enjoy this week's episode. So please welcome my guest, Kristen Lambert, here on The Magic Word. Today, my guest is someone who is in California right now, and I believe actually resides in California most of the time as well. But someone you may have seen on television in the past on several television shows, I believe, as well as not just on the Masters of Illusion, but also on some other TV shows then as well, and has appeared at magic conventions in her earlier, I started to say childhood, but I guess her earlier youth, earlier than now, as well as working with Criss Angel and working with the Paranormalists or but we'll get into all that then a little bit later then too. And she has also then taken a different kind of a pivot or a little bit of a change in direction as far as some of the things that she's involved with right now, which is why that's the perfect time of the year to talk with someone who is the perfect person for this perfect podcast. And that is Kristen Lambert. Hey there, Kristen, how are you?
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Well, I appreciate you making the time to chat with us over here today. And as I kind of alluded to, I guess, a little bit was as far as what you had pivoted into is a little bit different. Rather than just doing magic, you've been now doing something that has more of a spooky kind of a flavor and that kind of a thing. But I mentioned to begin with, before we get into all of that, I mentioned Criss Angel. Was it The Paranormalist or what was the show?
Supernaturalist.
Supernaturalist, that was it.
Yes, very close.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
That was
and
a
so
fun show.
You toured with them for a little while, isn't that right?
Yeah, I mean, I joined Criss Angel in, gosh, 2011, 2010, something like that. Mm-hmm. I had done his web show, and then I had done his TV show on Spike TV, and then joined his live Cirque du Soleil show when he was still Cirque du Soleil, and
right.
I was doing the straight jacket and the Met Trunk with the Wall of Fire, and it was, you know, wearing spike leather, and that led into me doing the Supernaturalists, which I did for a couple of years.
Now, in
that was a really fun show. Yeah,
didn't they use that? Was that on the East Coast? I don't recall that necessarily touring the same way the Illusionist did. It seems like they kind of had one-off kinds of shows, or did they have a residency in some place?
We had a residency at Foxwoods.
Foxwoods, that's where it was.
Gosh, a good number of months. It's all blurry, but we were there for a long time, and that was really fun. And we also, it was really great because you got to work with so many magicians. That was a really big cast.
I remember it was like Spencer Horsman and Banachek and some others.
Right, right. And it's so funny because when I was still at UCLA, before I joined the Criss camp, I had bought Banachek's PK leaflet, I guess you can say.
Okay.
And I was like, I have so many questions. I have so many questions. So I had an email drafted to Banachek basically being like, hi, I'm a big fan. I have so many questions about your PK routine, you know, because he just kind of gives the mechanics and
that's true.
Doesn't really explain the nitty gritty. And then I got a call literally a week later from Criss saying, hey, come join my TV show. Banachek is the executive magic producer. And I was like, oh, I'm so in because I have so many questions for him. And so literally the whole production of that TV show was just me being like, so Banachek, like about this peak. So Banachek, about this pre-show, you know, and it was just like, we developed such this loving father-daughter relationship.
Right. Right.
From that TV project, which then fed over into working on Supernaturalist together. And it was really special to be able to spend so much time together. And a lot of, like, you know, East Coast mentalists would come through to jam with him because we were stuck at Foxwoods for 6 months or however
sure.
long.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's how I met Dittleman and so many people just kind of coming through and hanging out with us. And it was a real crash course in so many things that I had wanted to do, but wasn't able to do in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I'm eating razor blades and I'm in a straight jacket and, you know, doing all this like femme fatale kind of stuff, which was very fun to do, but it just, you know, I wasn't able to like talk and engage with the audience in the way that I had wanted to initially, because what I was doing prior to joining Criss Angel's camp was I started doing seances in frat houses at UCLA. So I would charge these frat boys and their dates, and I would, you know, black out a room, and I had a little secret assistant, not a little secret assistant, I don't know, she was 5'2", but I had a secret assistant who would fit in this like cabinet, and, you know, we'd get them a little tipsy before the show, bring them in. I'd do some light seance stuff and then get into, you know, like a spooky dark seance. And I was working on a spook show with Ezekiel Zabrowski, who, you know, I don't know if he's a Penn and Teller guy. And we had been working on a spook show together, and we were going to kind of rent out like an abandoned warehouse in LA and do this spook show. And kind of as we were building up to launch this show, I kind of got swept up into the Criss camp. And then that wasn't kind of this unfulfilled vision that I had, which was based off of my obsession with horror, which started very young. And I remember being in high school and being up late one night watching some horror film on TV, and they had this, you know, infomercial thing for the 101 best horror films you've never heard of, 1999. And I immediately was like, okay, send this now. I'm in. And, you know, that's where I saw what really kind of started all of this. You know, they had a lot of really campy things, killer leeches, you know, all kinds of weird, funny, funny things. But they also had Zombie 2 on it, which was a Fulci film, which is basically supposed to be the sequel to Romero's Night of the Living Dead that had been re-edited for European audiences, incidentally, by Dario Argento of Suspiria fame. So Zombie 2 was supposed to be the sequel to this, and they had meant for it to be very funny because they had, like, one of the early scenes in the film is this zombie, like, fighting a shark underwater, which
weird.
Is, like, it's just weird.
Yeah.
And so they had expected making the film for it to be campy and funny, but it turned out to be extremely terrifying to people. There's this one scene that's very iconic, spoiler alert, where one of the characters gets pierced in the eye by, like, a splinter from a door, basically.
Wow.
It's incredibly graphic. I mean, Italian horror from the 70s through early 80s is notoriously incredibly gory. And this scene, I was just like, just the emotions that I felt from watching all of this, like, I know this is supposed to be funny, but at the same time, it's absolutely terrifying. Mm-hmm. And I was just mesmerized by this. And that led me to go down this Fulci deep dive where I saw The Beyond. And that film absolutely changed my life.
The Beyond.
The Beyond, yes. Mm-hmm. It's
the first one you were referring to is Zombie 2.
Zombi, Zombie mm-hmm. 2. Mm-hmm. And so The Beyond is set in the outskirts of New Orleans. It's about this haunted hotel where this guy opens up a gateway to hell. And it's kind of, I mean, there's, like, it's not exactly a zombie film. Arguably it is, but it's so much more than that. There are so many more elements. And basically, I think what struck me about it is the whole point of this film is that, like, we're born only to be erased. And it really, as they, I mean, again, please watch this film, everybody. My PSA, watch The Beyond. This, I can't, you can't see with this light, but this tattoo here is,
wow. That is extremely fascinating, about how that you got involved with those, that genre of film, because that, I usually hear of young boys, myself included, whenever I was quite young and I was very involved with all those kinds of original horror films, the Hammer films and different kinds of things are black and white, the Creature from the Black Lagoon, of course, Dracula and Frankenstein, etc. But and also had the little models that I would build, and so I like listening to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal podcast, because he has a lot of those people who were either in the film or who are heirs, the children of some of the people, like Lon Chaney Jr.'s kids or something, you know. So I like hearing about that. And that's very interesting. My point being is that, again, for the most part, it seems like that when I talk with people who are into it, they're mainly male persuasion. I don't see a lot of women who get it. It's like, oh, I don't like horror movies at all. So to me, this is fairly unique. That this is interesting to you and has been life changing to you then as well. So I find that fascinating.
I mean, I think
is that true.
I don't think
among your friends, do you have other
women? Yeah, I have. I mean, I think a lot of women are very, very into horror, and I don't think I think it's cross gender. I think it's completely universal because, you know, the themes present, I mean, maybe some movies lean more one way or another depending on how it's marketed or something like that, but I think the genre of horror is not just
for male related kind of thing.
I think like when you're looking at, like, you know, like magic is very male dominated. You can argue horror is male dominated, but that's not to say that it's male exclusive. You know,
okay. Good point.
When you go to these, like, Comic Cons or Monster Palooza or whatever. You know, it's a pretty, when I've gone, it's, you know, it's a pretty even split. You know, there might be divisions and the kinds of movies that people are like absolutely diehard enthusiastic about, but I don't necessarily think that it's just like
Let
a
me ask you
balloon.
then, the one you've been referring to over there have been kind of very odd and something having to do, I guess, with the gates of hell, et cetera, like that. When I think of some movie, let's say like Hostel or Saw or something in which it is not only gruesome, but also psychologically crazy of something that is a possibility as opposed to opening the gates of hell. Is there one particular, you know what I'm saying? Is there a thing between the unreal versus the potentially real? This could be a situation.
I think you know what I think is interesting about some of these more unrealistic films, shall we say, like Opening the Gates of Hell. We're not going to do that, but it's here we are being emotionally moved by this concept in the
Right.
film. I think what's so compelling about it is the philosophical elements of, you know, the more existential concepts of, you know, what are we doing here? And when I say what's the point, I don't mean that in a nihilistic sense. I mean that in an inquisitive sense of like, you know, what should we make of our lives considering we're bound to death? And
Like you're
so
saying, and
in,
beyond that, the whole concept is we are moving towards death every day of our lives.
right, absolutely.
Which in
I don't
reality
think
we
we are
are.
closer to the grave. Absolutely. Entropy, my friend, entropy. But you know, I've always found that really interesting to me. You know, I mean, this may sound morbid, and I assure you, I do not want to die. I'm very happy being alive, but you know, I don't fear death inherently. And you know, when I was very young, I remember saying, gosh, if for whatever reason I were to die in my sleep tonight or whatever, like, you know, people would be sad, but you know, the world would keep moving. And even though my time here would be over, like the world would continue to exist. And I found this immense peace in that in an interesting way. And yeah, you can argue that's very morbid and, you know, sure, but here we are. And so, you know, when I was at UCLA, I studied existentialism primarily. My degree focuses on metaphysics. And so, you know, I went deep into, you know, Nietzsche and Camus and their inspiration being Spinoza, Descartes. And so, you know, I spent a lot of time focusing on that. And like Camus says, like, we are condemned to live life to the fullest, hate death. We're here to live life to the fullest, hate death, and be condemned to a meaningless task. And you know, we kind of are. And so, that's not to say that we don't, again, live life to the fullest. That's in there. Like, yes, our tasks are meaningless because we are inevitably going to die. But you know, we're here to go for broke. We're here to be anti-nihilist. You know, Nietzsche's whole point is, you know, to seek freedom because we're going to die. Does that make
It
sense?
does
You
make sense.
know, like,
I know what you're
and
saying.
yeah, and so Nietzsche's whole point is to be anti-nihilist. And so that's why I love magic so much, is because inherently magic is anti-nihilist
And
because
will
it's
ground
saying,
you.
well, yeah, because it's saying like, you know, it's making you question things and it's making you think twice about your reality and what you think you know to be true. You know, you think you know the laws of gravity, and yet here's something levitating. And so it's making us question things in a way that is jolting us out of our lethargy, however you want to interpret that. And so it's inherently anti-nihilist, which is very exciting to me. And so I think what I find interesting about doing seance work and, you know, the kind of spook show, spooky stuff is that it's adding that extra layer of, we think we know the way the world works, we're shattering the way the world works, and we're realizing, oh, wait, we're all gonna die. You know, so like it kind of comes full circle in this interesting way. But then, oh, wait, but if there are spirits coming back, maybe when we die, maybe we are in some kind of liminal space. You know, we don't know. And so it's, I just find that like cyclical almost dialectical work, really fascinating.
Pretty fascinating. I that is. There's so much to unpack on all these things that we've talked about. So I kind of want to go back a little bit to the beginning when you were talking about in working then with Banachek and others back at the when you were with the Supernaturalists. Mm-hmm. And so that was something you said for about 6 months or so. And at that time, you had already again had this other idea of something that you kind of wanted to kind of get into. But even prior to that, when you were doing, I remember like it was yesterday seeing you on television and doing the Linking Rings. And I remember doing it also at the, I think an IBM convention or a contest or someplace, you know, which they were floating Linking Rings. It's yours was the first presentation I'd ever seen that. And I thought just beautiful. And I like your style and your method you were using. It was just very impressive, certainly. And I know your mother was kind of not a stage mother, but in a way she was kind of pushing it. Seems like your mom
was
very,
very involved.
Yeah,
for sure.
Is she to any degree still yet involved?
I mean, she's still, we're very close.
Yes.
And, you know, I talk to her almost every day, more or less. And, mm-hmm. you know, she's very important to me, but, you know, she hasn't, she'll come to a show if it's in LA.
Right.
But, you know, she's not like, involved in the same way that she was when I was like 12.
I would imagine so, because obviously you're a grown woman and so she's not following you. It's kind of like, okay, you're out of the nest, you're on your own. So right, I've done what I can. You are who you are. And so in continuing that, you were doing some magic and then we're on, as I mentioned, the Masters of Illusion with and others. And then you had most recently been doing some other shows, which we talked about briefly, like at the Stanley Hotel. I think you were filling in for Aidan Sinclair at his place and mm-hmm. There, and then also the Magic Lounge and the kinds of things that you are doing then now, which are kind of, again, on the spooky side of magic. How does that play throughout the year as opposed to, let's say, during the month of October?
Yes. So, you know, obviously September through October is my busiest time every year.
You sound like Max Maven. That's what he used to say too.
Yeah. I tend to like to not work in December because unless I am given full permission to summon the ghost of Christmas past,
I like that.
It doesn't quite work. Although I will say one year I did a set and Santa opened for me, mm-hmm. like a man dressed as Santa opened. And I'm
not
thinking,
the real Santa, just a man dressed as Santa.
Let's clarify that. they couldn't afford the real Santa. He's out of his price range.
That's where I come in. I know what you mean.
I love it. So I was like sweating bullets backstage being like, you know, it's one of those things where I'm like, I accepted the gig just to do a favor to someone. And I was like, I don't know how this is going to play. And you know what? It was fine.
Really? Totally. And there were children in the audience, obviously, too.
There were some children. Mm-hmm. I mean, I definitely like hammed up more jokes, toned down mm-hmm. certain things, you know, cut out the monologue about our dread of mortality, you know. So I, you know, I adjusted appropriately, but it was really fine. And I think that, you know, I was doing Chicago Magic Lounge in August. I've done it in July. Again, these are not spooky season months, and people get on board. I think people are interested in this kind of thing. You know, the Beyond was released April 29th of 1981. In April, Silence of the Lambs was released in February. You know, it's like these horror films don't just come out in October.
That's
and
true.
You enjoy them year round.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really haven't, I think there are some bookers who are concerned about it. And, you know, I get that, but I'm pleasantly surprised at how I have not run into problems of people not being able to get on board. And I think it's very much about knowing the audience, knowing the venue. Again, when I go to Chicago Magic Lounge, it's a cabaret theater. So I'm going to ham up more jokes. I'm going to lean into more of the magic procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to be so, you know, I'm going to do a gypsy thread with my opening monologue so that it's more visual as opposed to in a seance where I'm just going to come in hot with a monologue and you're going to sit there and listen to me for a couple minutes. So I think it's very much just about like knowing the venue and knowing the audience, but I have not had a problem being spooky in May. You know, I've worked the castle around Thanksgiving. I've worked the castle around Easter, and you know, it's not been a problem.
And when you're performing, they are not all seances. In other words, you're not bringing people up on stage around a table or anything.
Correct.
You're doing some stand-up spooky storytelling types of things, I see.
Right. So there may be some crossover in material, but there's not a big crossover. I mean, it's a little bit more like, again, for a seance, it's going to be much more solemn than I will for a cabaret theater. But what I am very proud of is the fact that I'm able to go from having people laugh at a joke one second to all of a sudden getting real quiet where you can hear a pin drop the next because, wait, what on earth is she doing now? Is she hypnotizing this person? What's happening here? Mm-hmm. And so I'm really pleased with how I'm able to, you know, bring forth those different moments in
the nuances of emotion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think ultimately it's like, you know, it's mentalism, it's mind reading.
But it's all about presentation, I think, then also. Like when I do seances and I work with Jamie Salinas and I do kind of the mix and mingle to begin with people before we go into the room where we actually do the seances and he conducts the seance itself. But what I will be doing is trying to get people to get into the mood, if you will. And I quickly realized within the first few weeks, many years ago when we first started doing this, that I can't be just doing magic and kind of a lively mix and mingle kind of a cocktail hour
for
people
to come
upstairs and say, hey, he just turned a 1 into 100 downstairs, so this must be trickery up here then too. So it's a different way of presenting things in more of a supernatural way that people, instead of laugh, they go, huh, wow. That kind of freaks them out a little bit.
And I think what's a lot of people, you know, because I have people ask me, oh, I want to start doing seances. It seems super cool. And, you know, these are like real, like stand up cabaret kind of guys. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things I always say is that, okay, well, no one's going to clap and they're not supposed to clap. And if
That's
they
right.
do clap, you should prevent them from clapping.
You discourage that. Right.
You know, I have basically a line where I'm like, you know, thank you, but this is spirits. And we don't need to applaud for spirits because they're just chatting with us like you're chatting with your friends, or you know what, I mean, whatever the line is. But
you don't applaud at a cemetery,
right? But I've had people, you know, it's funny. Normally, the people who applaud in a seance are like either magicians themselves or like somehow in the magic world.
Yeah.
But you know, so because I do things that are questionably, is this supernatural? Is this not? What is happening? You know, it's making people question there. I will often explain to bookers, like before the show, of saying like, look, like don't think that it's not successful if no one's clapping, because this is not a clapping, you know, this is not a, and your card, the five of spades, you know, this is not that kind of thing. That being said, you know, I find, and right now I'm up here in Folsom, California, doing shows at Mystique Dining for their Halloween Edgar Allan Poe themed experience. And
how long is your show?
40 minutes here.
Okay.
Yeah. Because there are poems interspersed throughout their dining experience. They eat, you know, that the eating is, gosh, almost an hour and a half. It's a 5-6 course meal. Mm-hmm. And then, and there are poems interspersed, and then I come out and do 40 minutes. And then there's another poem with a big finish. I won't spoil it,
okay,
but there's a big finish at the end. It's very cool. It's very cool. The first time I experienced it, I definitely screamed louder than anyone in the room.
And from here, you're going to the other Mystique.
Then I'll be going to Salt Lake City. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But people will applaud, because it's a little bit more of a show as opposed to proper seance.
How many people sit or seated there in the
There
Mystique?
are 22 here. And then in Utah, there's one room that's 30 and one room that's 50.
And the dining is in the same place as the show,
Yes. So
all the
they're
same
pretty
room. So you come
clear. So
in.
they're just sitting at a very, very long table. I'm at the head of the table. And, so some for like one effect, I have someone come up. And then for other effects, I go out into the along the table and perform there. And then some is just right at the front.
Now, I mentioned briefly about the Stanley Hotel and working with Aidan Sinclair, and that is a séance kind of a thing. And for those who may not have heard that podcast, I would suggest you go back to one of the early ones I did a year or so ago with Aidan, in which he was talking about his what a phenomenal life. I mean, an interesting guy who had served time in prison, and then anyhow, the stories he was talking about in prison doing magic, and then
Crazy.
anyhow, really crazy. So he's doing really well there. And the Stanley Hotel is known for being the inspiration for Stephen King, of course, for The Shining. It's not the hotel where they had filmed that, but it is the inspiration for that. And so I know he has a specific idea of the type of entertainers he wants to actually fill in for him when he does that from time to time. And so it's quite an honor, I'm sure, for you to have done that.
Yeah, it was so unreal. That hotel is something else.
Was it
And
pretty
what
spooky?
really,
I've not been there. I mean,
oh,
you could feel
it's
something.
wild.
Wow.
I had some experiences where I really,
Like what?
well, I was seated in a room that was the smoking room in the hotel when it was first built in 1909. And it was the only smoking room in the whole hotel because F.O. Stanley had three bouts of TB and didn't want smoking everywhere. And I was just sitting in there completely alone. And all of a sudden, I started to smell a cigar. But not just any cigar, I started to smell a Cuban. And not to derail us, but I know my cigars. Just saying.
I've been to
So
Havana too.
oh, I'm dying to go. Oh
You
my
should have
God.
gone to Magic Cuba. That was an awesome convention. I wish you'd have gone.
Yes, I missed out. I totally missed out. So I'm thinking, who is smoking a Cuban up here in 2022? And so I look out to the one smoking section of the whole hotel. No one is even smoking so much as a cigarette. And then a tour walks in, and this woman goes, "Ah, it reeks of cigars in here." So
Wow.
I thought, "Oh, it's not just me; it's someone." But then other people started chiming in. "I don't smell anything. I don't smell anything. I don't smell anything." And I thought, "This is so odd." But the heat was off for the summer. So it's not like anything was like, and it's a new heating system anyway. All the carpets are replaced. All the wood is replica, so it's been replaced. So there's really nothing that's like, it's not like it's in the carpet or something, because that's what I was thinking. And I just thought, this is awfully odd. Like, where is this odor emanating from? And then I smelled it in various other places of the hotel, again, when I would be alone. And, I started to smell it in places where there absolutely would not have been smoking, like FO's personal landing. There absolutely would not have been smoking there. And it's been a boardroom for many years, so it's not like anyone would have smoked in there since,
Right.
especially this Cuban smell. So weird, right?
So did you ask someone about that? I mean, did
Yeah, and I was told, "Welcome to the Stanley."
those kinds of things happen?
But
Interesting.
that's what I liked about working there was that people came in buckled up, ready
For an experience.
for an
Yeah.
experience.
Yeah, that's
Yeah,
great.
people walked in and they were invested. And like when I was doing Rick Gerber and I did a séance. I mean, I was the medium, but Rick, was the real, he was the producer of everything and the real, mover and shaker getting everything together. I mean, the amount of work and building, and I mean, Rick is we think of him as like the Budweiser
I was
magician,
going to
but
say that was the Budweiser organization. Exactly.
right. But that man, when it comes to power tools and mechanics and electronics, like, who knew? I have so much respect for Rick. He is a great mind. He's a great worker. He's a great builder. I loved working with him on this seance. We did a show called Whispers in the Dark. Gosh, 2019. So that was a couple of years ago.
How long did
And
that run?
well, we were scheduled to, well, we did it for 4 months
Before COVID.
before COVID. And then we were scheduled to continue. And then obviously we got canceled because of COVID. But that was a really great experience because you're doing, gosh, how many seances did I do a week there? I was doing two, three a
I was
day,
about to say you
Thursday.
do more than one a day.
Yeah, that was doing two or three Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then maybe one on Sunday, depending on how close we were to Halloween. And that we did that in an arcade, and I shared a wall, like a paper thin wall with a zombie VR game. So it was like a very different,
Environment.
people were like, oh, immersive theater seance thing. Like, yeah, okay, we'll do this. And they had just finished their tater tots and chicken wings and walked into the seance. And it was it's just like a different mindset as far as how you build the rapport with people and as far as what they're expecting. I really cut my teeth on that show, getting people who had just walked in from, pressing a bunch of buttons,
Yeah,
mashing
having
things
fun to
up.
kind of shutting them down a little bit and then focusing and being serious.
And that was, I mean, there in the very early days of that run, it was very frustrating.
You learned a lot, I'm sure.
I learned so much.
Yeah.
I
Trial
learned
by fire.
absolutely,
Yeah.
absolutely. And I really grew a great deal. And I remember I closed the first week of November of 2019, and then a week later or something like that, I was playing the castle, and I was doing like one new effect, and a couple like tried and true things. And again, I was like playing because I'm doing the castle, so it's still witchy, spooky, but it's very jokey. And Rick came and saw me, and he just said afterward, he was like, well, he was there with Sean McMaster, and Rick was like, Kristen, I'm so, I saw you pre-seance doing basically the same set, different stuff, but basically the same set. And now I'm seeing you do this post-seance run. I'm like, you're a totally different performer now, just because there had been so much growth as far as my confidence.
The maturity of it that has grown.
Right. So
Wow.
I have, even though it was very hard work at times.
You mentioned the word witchery, and I want to get to that for just a moment then as well, because
Sure.
I've noticed a lot of things that have you have posted over on Instagram then as well, in which they're really a lot of fun, kind of witchy, Wiccan kinds of things. So tell me something about how you pivoted into that
Yes, absolutely. So I don't
and dispelling
identify
some
as,
myths and things too.
I will happily dispel all the myths.
You don't have a broom in your
I'm not,
closet.
yeah. I don't consider myself, I'm Wicca. I'm not a Wiccan, but it's like one of those things where all witches are all Wiccans and pagans are witches, but not all witches are pagans and Wicca. Like, it's kind of different subsets of witchcraft. They're very established, but I don't practice in those ways exactly. But what happened was when I first joined Chris Angel's show, I had done his TV show, and now I'm transitioning into doing his live show. And I'm doing 12 minutes solo.
By the way, on that, I did want to clarify. You said you were wearing the leather and coming in and out of the boxes and you weren't speaking. Were you an assistant or were you actually the magician and you had an
Chris was
assistant?
not on stage. It was
It's just you.
just me. I did, the upside down straitjacket escape, 80 feet in the air with the free fall drop. I don't know if you remember that from seeing his show.
I do.
So I did that. And then I'd get lowered into the Met trunk, and one of the dancers would come out, you know, and we would do our switch, and I'd come out and the big wall of fire and ha, you know. And then in Supernaturalist, I did that, but I also did some things with razor blades, and then I facilitated other tricks as well. But yeah, so I have 12 minutes solo, and, you know, people have whatever thoughts they have to say about Chris, but to be able to carry 90 minutes with magic that scale, with an audience that big, I mean, I'm sorry, that is hard work, and it takes a very special skill set that you don't have unless you've done it. Does that make sense?
It does, of course.
You know, yeah. It's like, I mean, I it's funny when, you know, a lot of these guys, oh, I could do that. And it's like, eventually maybe, but right now, maybe not. Because, yeah, you know, people really don't realize carrying something that long and large and part, you know, all of the all, you know, it's very hard work, and it takes a lot of craft. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, and now I have to carry just 12 minutes, but it's just me. And how do I walk and how do I stand? And, you know, I don't want to be a 16-year-old teenage pop star, and I can't be the seance medium that I had been doing in frat houses. Like, what, how do I be? And, you know, they had paired me with dance coaches, and they were trying to make me into like a sexy dancer. Mm-hmm. And I just remember Chris and I talking, and I was like, I understand that, you know, Cirque doesn't get how to deal with me because they've never dealt with a young woman magician. They've only dealt with dancers and acrobats. So I get that they don't know what to do with me, but I don't think this dance coach is really pointing me in the right direction. And he's like, yeah, you look like a dancer doing magic. You don't look like a magician doing magic. Mm-hmm. So what we did was, the lighting designer's wife was this, she's this amazing, like, Harvard actress. And she was like, she came and saw rehearsal, and she's like, okay, I can help this gal. Like, I can do something with this. And so she basically, long story short, she bestowed many things upon me. But one of them was this goddess of the underworld in Greco-Roman mythology named Hecate. And she's the maiden and the mother and the crone, all three in one. And she embodies all of these archetypes and, you know, rules the underworld. We have Hades, but she's the goddess of the crossroads from the living into the underworld.
The river Styx.
Correct. And so, she was like, you know, you can embody this goddess and you can become powerful, which was very smart because I didn't know what I was doing. All I knew was that I was doing something wrong and I needed it fixed. And so, I mean, I would have drank in pig's blood had I thought it would have helped. I was so desperate to get better.
Sure.
And so, you know, she told me different things that I could do to, you know, get in touch with my concept of this goddess and to embody this goddess. And the more I indulged her, the better I got. And, you know, it's psychological. It's like, you know, you're now I was playing a character, you know, and the way rituals and spell crafting and all of that works is that you are the more ritualistic you make something, the more you're cementing your intention in your mind, and the more you're likely to live out that intention because it's more cemented in your mind. So, you know, is it because of the 12 cinnamon sticks and the 13 bay leaves and the, you know, cat's whisker? Is that
what's doing Newt.
It? Yeah. Right, exactly. Is that what's doing it? I mean, granted, some people would argue, and I've read books where it's like, no, it has to be exactly those things because that's what works. And it's like, well, that's maybe what worked for that person who did that spell and wrote it down. But ultimately, what's working for us is ceremony and the psyche.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
And so the more I would chant before a show, or the more I would like do certain things, which, you know, that whatever it may be, you know, the stronger I got. And so,
So that's, you know, that's what transitioned you, I guess, then into this type of.
Yeah, I mean, when I left, I got injured in the straitjacket, and I left, and that was kind of a graceful way to bow out of Chris's camp. And, you know, I went to New York and I worked with the Expert Playing Card Company with Kalush for a while. And then I came back to LA and I was kind of listless. Like I knew I wanted to do magic, but I didn't know who I was. And I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. You know what I mean? And
sure.
So I did random things. Like I taught improv to Alzheimer patients. I was a tour guide, like, you know, all of these kinds of like odd jobs and just being like, what am I doing?
Hmm.
And I had undergone a pretty rough breakup and was just, it's such like a listless, sad, weird, dark place. And I was like, I've got to get out of this. And a girlfriend of mine had gifted me this like candle that's supposed to embody this other death goddess. And she had just gifted it to me because she knew I liked like spooky things.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know what? There's that Hecate goddess. Like there's what Mindy told me about. Like maybe I can get tapped back into that because I felt very powerful when I was engaged with that, you know, back initially. And so, you know, I would light this candle and do various things. I didn't know what I was really doing, but you know, I was kind of engaging again with this very primal urge to create some semblance of control over my life.
Okay.
And because, you know, that's really the root of what, you know, witchcraft and a lot of religion too, and all of that is very much just about like how to have control over our lives, especially the way we live, you know, whatever you want to say, late stage capitalism, America, you know, patriarchal systems, like, right. You know, whatever you want to say, like, there's a lot of like, you know, we're in this grind. Even if we're doing what we love by doing magic, you know, we're still kind of in this grind of getting gigs, emails, you know, so much of this, and it can be very easy to be defeated, even if we're doing something that we love or used to love or whatever. So I started to engage with this goddess again and really start to research and learn more. And I got a call from a big production company, Fremantle. They do AGT and all kinds of things. And they said, hey, I don't even know. It was one of those really weird things because I don't even know how they knew that I was the right person. I think it's because one of the producers there either saw me at the castle or saw the seance somehow, but like through, oh no, I hadn't done that yet. I have no idea. I have no idea how they found me, but they found me. They said, hey, we know you do spooky stuff or you're interested in this. Will you write this Haunted Places show?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is very weird.
Wow.
This
just
is
out of the blue.
Out of the blue. And I thought, this is really, really weird. And I was like, yeah, of course I'll do it. I mean, I was just like bumming around doing, teaching Tai Chi and
whatever you know, had to do.
Just like yeah. Weird stuff. And so I said, of course. So I think they gave me like 2 weeks or something to write like this, you know, they wanted the whole treatment, like every episode beat by beat written out. And I did it. And I was like, Oh, I do love magic, and I do love what airs on the more spooky side, B. And as I was writing this show, every moment that I was creating for these other magicians, I thought, oh, I wish I could do this. Oh, I wish this could be me. So even though I had just taken this, gosh, you know, year and change long break, I thought, oh, gosh, I want to do this. And incidentally, I submit this thing to them for the final time and it's out of my hands and it never got, I think they maybe filmed a sizzle for it or something, but it never went anywhere. But
mm-hmm.
At that same time, I got a call from a casting agent who had tried to get me on AGT for many, many seasons. Mm-hmm. And I had always said no for one mm-hmm. reason or another. And she said, okay, I'm casting a new show. and we want you to be on it. And I said, okay, I'll do this one, because I knew I needed something to push me to create material in this new kind of vision that I was creating for myself.
Okay.
And so I built a bunch of stuff, and I went in and I, you know, filmed a bunch of stuff for them. And a lot of what was working was I had this, I ate needles, and I did this bit where I said, like, now I'm not a witch, but if I were a witch, this would be a lot easier. Or that, I mean, something, yeah, that was, yeah, the gist. And then I did a thing with a psychic earthworm. And again, this show also never went anywhere, but now I'm like, the wheels are turning and I'm creating new stuff. And I got myself booked at the Flappers Yoohoo Room. And I said, I'm putting together, you know, 15 minutes, and I'm going to film this, and I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. So I filmed my little bit, and I remember showing the video to Regal. I was like, Kristen, what's funny about this, your set, is that you're gorgeous, and I was wearing this long black gown, which is a version of what I still wear now, but I was wearing this long black gown and all this jewelry. And he's like, what's so funny is that you're like, you look gorgeous, but you're holding an earthworm. And it's like, this dichotomy is funny. And quite frankly, this whole, like, I'm not a witch, but it'd be easier if I were, just be a witch. And gosh, I all but printed out that quote and put it on my mirror. Just be a witch. So if
embrace
all
it.
Of this, you can thank Regal for it.
Thank you, David Regal.
Thank you, David Regal. Yeah, just be a witch. And I was like, well, and the thing was that, you know, up even through this, even saying I'm not a witch, but if I were, it'd be easier. I was a baby witch, as they say, and the community of, like, you're a baby witch, you're just learning stuff. And I was a baby witch, and I'm kind of messing around with making my life a little bit more ritualistic and engaging with active worship with this goddess. And do I believe that this Greco-Roman goddess is actively participating in my life? I don't know. But I do believe in the sense of, like, having something larger than myself that I can kind of, like, feel I have this communion with. And it just makes me feel a little bit more in my body and a little bit more powerful and a little bit more in tune with the universe.
Well, when you're talking about the community, I'm assuming you're talking about the witch community. And so, yeah, they say, yeah, there is a baby witch. And as you grow, and you've been doing this for a number of years, such that, mm-hmm, you have grown, I assume, to the point,
yeah,
of being a full-blown witch at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess you would, yeah, consider yourself. And so in that community, do you commune with these other people and talk with them and get some ideas, or,
yeah, I do,
in rituals, you know, with them, or,
yes. And you know, my practice is generally fairly solitary, but I do have people who I'm very close with who are also witches. And, you know, it's really just about, like, wow,
dancing around the fire under moonlight, that kind of a thing. Yeah,
well, you'd think, but really it's just more of like a, hey, I found the coolest stick the other day. You know, that's really more of what it is. You know, because it's just about, like, communing with nature, communing with the universe. And for me, it's really just a way to bring in the existential philosophy that I studied at UCLA, mm-hmm, and my obsession with death conceptually, and my obsession with magic, the art of magic, tricks. And, you know, it's really just a way for all of these elements of my life to intersect.
Mm-hmm. And where do you expect this to go? As far as where are you taking it, or where do you think it will be taking you? Are you just kind of, yeah, open to wherever it goes?
I mean, I am very open, in the same way that Fremantle just contacted me out of the blue. Like, sure, you know, stuff happens. I perpetually have TV things in the works as it goes. You know, you're always, when one thing doesn't land, you create another, and, you know, it's just the dance of TV. But, you know, also I'm planning on doing more seances in haunted places throughout the US, and I'm lining that up for 2023. And, I'm just happy to be able to share my views on life and death and the afterlife and everything in between. It's just a really special thing. And I love when I have people coming up to me after the shows being like, wow, that really made me think. And wow, that's so crazy. I never thought about X, Y, or Z that way. And, you know, I have the show that I have right now is very, again, it's very like light and there are very humorous moments. And it's a little bit more jovial. I mean, yes, it's spirits interacting with us. It's more of my cabaret show. And again, that's what I'll be doing here in Folsom and also in Salt Lake City, et cetera, et cetera.
And when you're talking now about other kinds of venues where you'll be performing throughout the next year or so and on into the future, are you looking at magic venues, for an example, like Smoke and Mirrors and again, going back to Chicago Magic Lounge, or are you talking about things that are non-magical that will
non-magic.
Be like, okay, so there'll be things for the general public, if you will, that'll be like Theater in the Round or black box theaters and things like that in larger cities.
Or, you know, like there's a restaurant in New Orleans called Muriel's and they already have a seance room and for a very expensive fee, you can eat in there. And so it's like, wouldn't that be cool to also do a show in there? So I don't know. I don't want to say I'm doing X, Y, or Z because I don't want to speak too soon about anything. I'm in talks with, you know, other places in Portland and Texas and New Orleans and Florida and, you know, so many different places. And everything is a work in progress until you're on stage, you know?
Right. Yes, that's true. Just look at it as an open book and kind of see where it takes you, I guess. And so that's a good attitude
absolutely.
To have.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've been writing for Genie for the past several years. I have a column called Stages Studio, and that explores how magic can be elevated beyond just performing tricks and into a more artistic endeavor. And so I'm continuing to do that. And then that has spawned some other things, again, that I can't quite talk about just yet. But hopefully you'll be reading more from me in the near future.
Good.
As well as, you know, catching me at a haunted place.
Well, that's what I was about to ask next as we start to wrap up then over here. Where can people find you or catch up with you as far as your Instagram handle and Twitter and Facebook and all that?
Yes, Instagram is my name, Kristen Lambert. I'm at Kristen Lambert, KRYSTYN. And I have a Facebook fan page, but the real juice is on Instagram. Okay. And I don't have a personal Facebook page. There are many Kristen Lambert Facebook pages with my photo, with all kinds of crazy posts, and they are not me. I do not have a personal page on Facebook.
So it's just,
all the time I have people being like, is this you? No.
It's just Instagram and Twitter.
I also have a Twitter. I haven't posted in a very long time. It's really just Instagram. Facebook. I do have a fan page. If you are not on Instagram, you can follow me on the Facebook fan page.
I didn't know there was an Instagram fan page. That's separate then too. Oh, okay.
Facebook fan page.
Oh, Facebook fan page. Pardon me. Okay.
Yes.
Different from your own personal fan page.
Right. I do not have my own personal page, but there is Facebook.com/Kristen Lambert is the fan page where a lot of my Instagram posts go.
Right.
But if you want to see all the stories and all the like the day in the life kind of stuff, that's over on Instagram.
I love those. You spend a lot of time doing that. And it looks like, are those TikTok videos and things you put out then as well or just reels?
You know, I posted a video of me eating needles on TikTok and I got banned.
They took you off. Well, it's dangerous.
So no, I'm not on TikTok either.
Okay.
But I do. I'm just about to start filming 10-second horror stories again.
I love that show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. It's really fun.
Yeah.
So I've been so busy. You know, Halloween is just my craziest time.
Gosh,
I hope to film more of those, some more cemetery videos, because that's always really fun.
Right.
I live in some great cemeteries in LA. Oh, my
gosh. There's a good one here in Houston. In fact, nearby, when you come and get booked in Houston working someplace, I'll be sure and take you over there.
Let's do it.
Howard Hughes is buried there. And I mean, a lot of other people. They've got these beautiful headstones with lots of angels and everything. It's wonderful. It's great. You'll love it. Well, listen, then if we do wrap up, because my podcast is called The Magic Word, I always like to close by asking my guests, what's your philosophy of life? What is it you live by? What are your word or words? I don't mean abracadabra. I mean,
death waits for no one.
Remember that death waits for no one. Very well put. Thank you, Kristen. I appreciate you being
my
guest
here
today.
Thank you so much, Sweet Scott.
It's been great. So with the Magic Word Podcast, that was Kristen Lambert. This is Scotty out. Thank you, Kristen, for being my guest this week. It was a pleasure getting to know you a little bit better and exploring the multifacets of your life. My goodness, for such a tender young age you are right now and to have accomplished so much, it's just amazing and an inspiration for the rest of the listeners, I'm sure. So I hope you, the listeners, have enjoyed that as much as I have. It was just a lot of fun. Well, again, I want to remind everybody, if you can help us with your financial donation, that would be great. If you cannot, you can help us certainly by giving us a 5-star rating on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts, and then also giving us a nice comment or two. If you can't rate us 5 stars, then hold off until you finally can. It will help our podcast to grow. Well, this has been a lot of fun here this week, certainly, and I've enjoyed bringing this Halloween treat to you. We have another rather interesting guest coming up next week. And if you subscribe to the pod letter, you know who that's going to be. But we continue our interviews. We've had an interview with a witch, and next week we'll have an interview with a, well, we'll let that be a surprise for next week. Except for those who, again, have subscribed to the pod letter, because you know who we're going to be having next week. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to always make the best of your life because, well, death waits for no one. This is Scotty out.